of the internet email system in Pakistan and a well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Southeast Asia. Joining us, as I said, on the Business Line. Hi, Imran.
Hello, George, and a good morning to you.
And good to talk to you. A lot of things going on. I want to find out. It seems to me there is some turmoil building again in India. And I know that there's even write-ups in the newspaper talking about turmoil building ahead of elections, and I think the elections are quite a ways off. But what is the socio-political mood in India right now?
George, it's interesting that we, you know, India is such a huge country that even if there's a minor rumble there, we might not hear about it in the news simply because there's so much more ugliness happening in smaller parts of the world. But the fact is that India is a large, you know, 1 billion plus population country, and a democracy, obviously, with nuclear capabilities, and right next to several countries with nuclear capabilities, including Pakistan, China, the Soviet Union, etc. So the fact that it's an unstable neighborhood is bad enough, but when any kind of instability becomes visible within the country itself, or within especially the political structure, that it is time to worry. And the unfortunate thing is that it's not being noticed as yet by our policymakers, etc., whose attention may be diverted elsewhere. So yes, there are rumblings, and there is some there's some doubt about what the future holds. We're coming to the, you know, the turn of the century, so to speak, and economic issues, the nuclear issue with Pakistan, the fact that Kashmir is still an open issue with Pakistan, and a similar situation or a similar problem in Kosovo is being dealt with by military force from the outside. All these things conspire, or even I could say they converge to create this sense of not knowing, doubt, uncertainty, fear, anger, resentment, and also even a little bit of saber-rattling. All of the above that happens in the public psyche, which puts the politicians on the spot. And what ends up happening in regions like Pakistan and India is that politicians will then make either illogical decisions or irrational statements to try to diffuse what they consider a bigger problem, which is hanging on to their seats, but leading to much bigger risks for not just the whole country, but the whole region, and eventually the whole planet in the long run.
Well, you know, you could make a case that India has a point in terms of maybe how it reacts to us here in the States, because they first of all, they do have some alliance historically with Russia. But beyond that, here they are. If they do anything, we tend to come down on them pretty hard. Now, I may be overstating the case, but they seem to. And yet, we appear to be giving so much carte blanche to China. And if, it seems to me, if I were an Indian leader, political leader, I would be a bit miffed by the fact that the U.S. seems to be so tough on us whenever we do anything that disturbs them, and yet so willing to forgive China.
Absolutely, George. One of the things.
Let me just say that, as a neutral party, that may not be an accurate impression, but it certainly would not be. It would certainly be an understandable one.
Absolutely, and yes, the fact that in the days of the Cold War, when China not only had its good and positive relationship with Pakistan, but not a strong relationship with the West at that time, the Chinese and the Indian governments and nations were basically at odds with each other, and there was this almost a three-way balance of power, because you had Pakistan, the U.S. ally, you had India, the Russian ally, 10 times larger, and then you had China, which is even larger than that, with the nuclear capabilities and all the power at its disposal, but not aligned either strongly with the Soviet Union or with the United States. Along comes the opportunity for Pakistan to play a mediation role between the United States and China, and both from the fact that it's a huge economic opportunity, it's a huge military threat if not handled, it's a huge rogue state if let loose on its own without any relationship building. So the U.S. made the wise decision, both from the economic sense, from the military sense, from the geopolitical and even the social sense, to open the doors to China, with and in which Pakistan obviously played a positive role. That obviously did not go over very well with India at that time. It actually even brought it closer to the Soviet Union. Now, over time, as the Chinese relationship grew with the West, yes, the American governments in general have tended to let China get away with a lot. Looking at the fact that nuclear weapons, nuclear secrets might get stolen right from under our nose, and the person is just sent home, speaks for itself. Now, I don't know what level of secrets might have been shared, stolen, or whatever, but I know for a fact that if I work in a software company, and even if I take out some software code just to look at home and I get caught, I could lose my job. But here is a nuclear state that has been in a Cold War status for a long time, is taking secrets right from here, and there's nothing done about it. Instead, we develop trade relations, we give them more opportunities to be most favored nation, etc. In the meantime, India, which likes to think itself as nothing less than China, and perhaps rightly now that it also has nuclear capabilities for a long time, feels that when it detonated its devices, yes, Pakistan was penalized too, but India was penalized a lot harder than China would have been under similar circumstances. So yes, that does not go over very well.
Am I correct, Tula? I mean, and I think that this is, again, just it's a perception that I pick up as I talk to a lot of analysts, but it's an understandable perception, even if it's not totally accurate, and is a bit presumptuous. But you would get the impression that if India, for example, decided to march on Bangladesh or some other and say okay, then Nepal's a better example, and say okay, now you're actually historically a part of India, so we're taking you back. That the West would come down on India with everything it had, but China gets away with it. And I think what I'm saying is that India has to be a bit sensitive now to that, and some of their reaction to how we behave in the West is probably tempered by or irritated by how we deal with them relative to China. It's like, you know, the children always say, hey, well, he got away with it, and we always say, well, that's neither here nor there. But the fact is it is here nor there when you're big countries.
Absolutely, George, but... And as you know, even though I'm from Pakistan, I'm also I treat the whole region as equally important. Mm-hmm. And my comment is more less to go India bashing, but more to actually say there is a counterpoint to that. And here I would defend U.S. policy, and I could say that yes, India, you may seem to think that we come down harder on you than we do on China, but the fact of the matter is that China never claimed to be a democracy, and we are trying to help them come along. And we rightly or wrongly, feel that economic development and means of communication and the new technologies enabled the democratization process to proceed faster. So, yes, it's like giving a little more time, spending a little more time with the problem child in the family, not because you love that child more or you'll like its misbehavior, but it's that you need to handle that child differently. However, you are a democracy. You're not just claiming to be a democracy. You have never had military power, like military takeover power. You are the largest democracy. You're a bigger democracy than the United States, obviously. And yet we have looked the other way when you have had your Sikh problem and when people have been killed by the hundreds, if not thousands, in the streets of Punjab state there. We have also looked the other way when you have done your nuclear weapons program despite getting aid and technical assistance from the United States. We have looked the other way when the United Nations resolutions about Kashmir have been ignored for 50 years, and you have consistently rejected our requests to help mediate this issue between India and Pakistan. And Pakistan has always said, yes, please come in and help us solve the problem. And you are the one who says we don't want to talk about it. So again, this was not a harangue to beat up on India, but to say that the U.S. policymakers could possibly and potentially use these points and say, we are actually treating you better than we have treated China.
That is point well made. I think you make a good point that we are, you know, China's circumstances are such that we're trying to coax them into better behavior, and we would expect more from India as a democracy. Let me ask about what's going on in that democracy. The headlines are telling us that, as we started this interview, that they are that their ruling coalition government, led by the Hindu nationalist group, the BJP, They're ruling BJP. They are in turmoil. It appears that they are facing this month, I believe, in the next week or 10 days, a vote of confidence, which they are not expected to be able to pass, or they will not get a vote of confidence. What is your assessment? What are they facing, and what's likely the outcome?
Basically, before we even could discuss the possibility of BJP staying in power, we have to take one quick look at India's history. A huge democracy, but still very much ruled really by a clan, if not a single family, for most of its history.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nehru family and Mrs. Gandhi, then the Rajiv Gandhi and Sanjay Gandhi and Rajiv Gandhi, and then hope, you know, people even trying to get Sonia Gandhi get involved in politics, and many hoping that someday Rahul Gandhi, the late Mr. Gandhi's son, will someday come into power. Now, you have to look at it in that context, that even when this family has been in power all this time, it's been a democracy, but it's almost been like an elected monarchy, much like the Kennedys sort of enjoyed that status in the United States,
mm-hmm.
at one time.
Mm-hmm.
In this mix, you had the Congress always lead the country for most of its history. The BJP alliance came into power, one, because there was also the lack of a strong Gandhi family candidate, so to speak, because Sonia Gandhi refused to go into power, into politics, and that's the widow of the late Mr. Gandhi. And because she refused to go into power, the Congress party had its own little problems, and the BJP used very strong Hindu sentiment, because India has a huge Hindu population. It's 80% or more Hindu, let's say. This party is called the Bharatiya Janata Party, which is the BJP. It really speaks for the Hindus of India, saying that you are treated as a second-class citizen, or you have less rights than the minorities in your own country, etc., etc. And there is a role that can play in getting into power. The BJP played that card, but there is just so far you can go based upon hate-mongering, destroying mosques, or beating up on the minorities. If in the long run you create this nuclear power state by detonating 6 devices, yes, again, the spirit of the nation will rise, and I'm sure it applied to the Hindus and the Muslims and the Christians, all of India. You take some pride in your country becoming a nuclear power or declaring itself to be that. But down the road, when tempers and when emotions die down a little bit, and you look and say, you know something, having these nuclear weapons has not really stabilized the situation anymore, especially if the bigger enemy who I was threatening,
right,
already has them, that's China. And the smaller enemy that I was hoping to scare off, Pakistan, also has them now. So I have lost a lot of money, I have lost goodwill and even some faith in public opinion worldwide. My economic conditions have not improved, and just hating and going on a message of hate and keeping these people in power based upon anger and hate against some religious group has not done much to solve my problems.
Let's put this in perspective before we run out of time on it. We've only got a minute. The fact is, the latest, I mean, they've had one government after another in India now, despite the hierarchy that you've been talking about. I think they've had one government after another over the last few years anyway, virtually a government a year almost on average. And now this latest storm, while you're talking about the military thing, I guess has to do with the fact that they dismissed a Navy chief, and then there's a film actress, really, who is the head of one of the smaller parties, I think.
Right.
And she is demanding that they not only reinstate this Navy chief, but now remove the defense minister who sacked him. So there's some internal problem here. And it just goes to show that they're down to the micro as well as the macro in terms of how they agree and disagree on everything. In the meantime, she's facing her own trial on corruption, so it's a real mess over there.
Actually, she's one of the most corrupt leaders known. I mean, publicly, people have seen the way,
right,
she has amassed wealth with no visible source of income. But again,
we have to sum it up real quickly. But where is this going? Are they going to fail the vote of confidence? And what's that going to mean? Very briefly, what's that going to mean to the government? They're
basically
going,
it could go either way, George. What it can mean is that if she walks out of the coalition and left to the downfall of the government,
mm-hmm.
whoever comes in power could have her tried for whatever crimes she has committed. So it is actually in her interest to do saber rattling, but actually give in and compromise, which is really another way of saying politics.
As usual. But it has effect, and we're running out of time, but it did have effect and is expected to continue to have effect on India's capital markets, and that's another discussion, and we'll get a chance to talk about that at another time, see how it rings out. Thank you much for joining us today, Imran.
Certainly, we will discuss the uncertainty of the region.
Imran Anwar, founder of Imran Net Services in New York. That ends this hour of the Business Day on Money.